Hello and welcome to episode 54 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today, we'll be talking about gaming trends. We'll take a look at recent and upcoming releases and talk about how the industry is changing. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jiljam, George Gier, and Adam Harrison. Also, a huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well.
Thank you, Josh. Welcome back from the eclipse.
Oh, yes. I've seen the dark side of the moon.
You have to give us a bit of an update.
It was just mind-blowing. Like, oh, man, what a crazy experience. Like, it just kept getting darker and darker and darker. And we had, like, a mountain. I don't know how many miles behind us, but you saw the mountain go completely black before it hit us. And you could just see the shadow coming towards us. And then the birds were freaking out.
Lord of the Rings doom coming at you kind of.
It felt kind of a little bit scary. Like,
I bet.
It was just getting darker and darker and darker, and then suddenly really dark, and it was like sunset all around towards every edge of the horizon, just in the middle of the day. And I don't know if you've seen the film Interstellar. Have you?
Yep.
You?
Yes. Yep.
And so there's that black hole, that weird how the black hole looks in that film. It kind of looks a bit like that. Like, I'd never seen it before with my own eyes, but it was still quite bright, the corona. Oh, man.
Yeah. So for those who maybe this is your first episode, Josh wasn't with us at our Gen Con Live episode because he was seeing the solar eclipse in the Path of Totality in a place in the middle of the country where it was nice and dry with no clouds.
Yes, Madras, Oregon.
All right. So we had to give Josh a bit of a hard time. But to be honest, Josh probably had... You had a good time, I'm
sure. Yeah, we didn't see the eclipse really at all here. It was cloudy.
Yeah, you wouldn't have even known it was happening.
It just looked stormy for a while. Yeah. And then you realize, oh, it's not a storm. It is dark in the middle of the day.
Yeah. Right. But it wasn't like black dark. It was gray dark.
It looked like a storm. I had the glasses and like it peeked through the clouds. I saw it at what, like 70-something%. So, you know.
Right.
It was still pretty cool.
Cool to see a crescent sun. It's like, what? Crescent sun? What's going on?
Yeah, and that's what I saw too, is basically the crescent sun. It's like, oh, that is kind of cool. But you couldn't see it if you just looked at it and don't look at the eclipse with your naked eyes. But if you were just like, everyone's like glanced at the sun, if you were glancing at the sun, it was still just a big ball of fire in the sky. It wasn't, you couldn't see any kind of covered up because the moon wasn't covering it enough where it was keeping all that light back.
Kind of blinds you from seeing the actual shape of it.
Right. Yeah. So, but I saw a lot of things, the colander thing where you like,
you can put make them the in shadows, the shadows and
see it all. There was one guy I work with. He took a picture with his phone and it captured the crescent. Only once. All the other times he took a picture, it was just like a big ball of
sun. Yes, the sun flare. I got one picture like that where the sun flare is in a crescent shape. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like, how did you do that? He's like, I don't know. Like, we kept trying to figure it out. So, but yeah, so that was the eclipse. Josh is planning for 2024 now.
Well, no, I mean, I would love to go either 2019 or 2020. Both Chile and Argentina get it 2 years in a row. So I've never been to either of those countries.
So you're going to be an eclipse chaser now.
Maybe. I'm pumped for it. It
was Spencer amazing. Found eclipse cruises. I didn't know that would be so hard to say. But yeah, they'll take you to, like, you can follow the Path of Totality too for a while, like in the ocean.
That's
and like the whole cruise is planned around an eclipse.
Yeah. They happen like every 2 years someplace on the planet.
Yeah.
So it's not a super rare thing. This one was rare because it basically went coast to coast of the US, and you know how we think about the US. So but anyway, we're supposed to be talking about games.
We are.
We could talk about eclipses all day, apparently.
Yeah. We are starting a new contest. However, I'm going to wait to start it until next week. So we did our August giveaway. That was Raxxon, and we have our three winners. The games will be in the mail by the end of the week. And we are going to start a new contest, which will be our September giveaway. That will be for Mass of Darkness. I just want to get my shipping notice before I tell you that I'm going to be able to send it to you. also, I'm going to put a little asterisk on for international people. Yeah, Aaron won one last contest, and he's in Sweden. So I finally got that in the mail to him. Shipping internationally is crazy super expensive. So if you want to enter the contest internationally, you will have to cover shipping, and it'll be somewhere between $90 and $300. So.
Or, wait, I just had an idea. Couldn't, if they win internationally and they can't cover shipping, then couldn't they, like, you buy them a game that's, like, that you can send them within their own country?
I'm thinking that, of, like, an alternate prize. There must be a way. Yeah. Yeah. I'll have some kind of international-only contest or something. Right. But, yeah, so I'm just mentioning that because we have mentioned it before, like, early on when we started doing the contest. But international, that one's a little bit trickier, so keep that in mind.
So, wait, it's Massive Darkness, which sounds like an amazingly cool name. Is there anything we should
Massive
know about
Darkness
it?
Is a cool mini or not. It was a Kickstarter. Tons of Kickstarter exclusives. So the copy I'm going to be giving away will have all the Kickstarter exclusives with it. It is a co-op dungeon crawl game. So
sweet.
Yes. And I was just making sure I had the right name because it's been a lot of Massive and slash Darkness.
Such a cool name, Massive Darkness. Massive Darkness.
So it should be really cool. I'm looking forward to it myself. Mm. I got two copies so I could give one away.
Nice.
So that will be a contest. That will be our September contest. That will happen soon. Gen Con's over. Our next convention that we will be at will be Game Hole Con. That is the first weekend of November in Madison, Wisconsin. We will have a table there. We will have lots of games that we're going to be hosting. So if you're in the Madison area or Wisconsin area or within a few hour drives of there or want to fly into Madison, it's a good convention. Come visit us. And all three of us will be at that one.
Yes.
And so close to the Dells, if you want to go do some like gaming and then water parking.
Yeah.
It's a really great location for both those things.
For those people who are not familiar with the Dells, because we mentioned it, we were in Chicago, so we just know it. The Dells is a city in Wisconsin. Wisconsin is not in a warm area, but the entire city is based on water parks.
Yep.
Most of those water parks are indoor. So you can go to them year round.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They're like 50-50 indoor, like 50-50. Outdoor.
Yeah. They usually have
every
like half
water
indoor.
Every water park has a lot of indoor water park to it, though.
Yep. Makes so sense. You can go in the middle of winter and
in
still...
In fact, most of the people I know who live in Chicago mostly go in the winter because it's the only fun swimming water type activity you can do in the winter.
And it's off season, so it's cheap.
Yeah.
Nice.
So that is what we're talking about with the Wisconsin Dells. So if you are planning a trip to Madison, the Dells are maybe an hour away or maybe an hour and a half.
I was going
to
say like 45 minutes.
Yes. Yeah. So it's right around the corner. Yeah. You can do both. You can game and do water slides. Kickstarter. This is a record, like a literal record, because this has never happened before. 2 weeks in a row that I haven't kickstarted anything.
What?
I know. I will say that I've gotten a few Kickstarters in the mail. I got my Mistborn House Wars, which I need to play. Josh, you are familiar with Mistborn.
I love the Mistborn series. Yeah. Yes. Brandon Sanderson, right?
Yep. So that's an intrigue. It's a 3 to 5 player game. Like basically the house wars between all the different houses. But we will give you an update on that once we've played it. I also got Twilight of the Gods, which is a dueling card game. Sort of kind of like Codex, where you have all the cards. Here's a thing, but it's expandable. They plan on releasing new decks. Each deck centers around a particular god of any particular mythology. But it looks really good. Still haven't played it, but it arrived. I'm actually now checking off of like the 70 or so Kickstarter games. I'm going through and checking off. Did I get that one? Did I get that one? So that is my Kickstarter update. We did want to talk a little bit about Gen Con. So at our Gen Con show, we didn't talk about a lot of the games at Gen Con.
We didn't talk about the hall.
Right. So
it was early in the weekend still.
Yes. It was only
for you at least.
It was Friday. Yep. Mm-hmm. So Josh, you were not at Gen Con.
No. Nope.
As we mentioned, you were, but that's okay because we're going to share this stuff with you.
Woo. Missed out.
Yeah.
I did.
Yep. Katie, you picked up a couple games.
I did. I picked up two, in fact. And now I'm going to completely fail at remembering
Osprey.
So Osprey Games, I picked up Odin's Ravens. I talked about that one on the show a bit.
Yep.
That one's really fun. I've had a chance to play it a few more times. I brought out this game and I played it with Spencer and he said, do you want to play again?
Whoa.
So that's like a huge ringing endorsement from Spencer on that one, I feel like.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. And we brought it out to his mom's place and we played, it's a head-to-head game and we played a few rounds against each other and we're like, the way you use the cards can be very strategic. So we're like trying all these like, okay, so I did it this way this time. Now I want to try this. So like there's these Loki cards that you can use and there's like a tendency to kind of play them like sporadically throughout the game, but I was like, I wonder what happens if I just try to race with my terrain cards and then like hoard my Loki cards for the end of the game. And I like just creamed Spencer.
So Odin's Raven, it's a 2-player only game.
Yes.
And it's a race. It's a race. 2 ravens are racing through a landscape and you play cards to move your ravens and adjust the track.
It's really fun.
Well, yeah, I mean, if Spencer likes it, I mean, he should have his own seal of approval, a bit like Oprah or something. Just, it gets the Spencer stamp.
Spencer approved.
Yeah.
Did you remember the other one yet?
I think it's called Fairy Tales.
Okay.
I think this one is from WizKids.
Okay.
And it is a storytelling game. So you have a hand of cards, and you start telling a story. And as you bring up elements of the story, you have cards in your hand. So if you say, like, there's a princess, and you have a princess card in your hand, you can play it. But if you are listening and they say, she's a beautiful princess, and you have the beautiful card in your hand, you can play that, and then you're the storyteller. So it's a storytelling hand game.
Huh, that's interesting. So, but isn't there like an incentive to like learn all the words, the keywords, and then not use any of the other words that you don't have?
So there are challenges to like, if you feel like they're telling the story poorly, or you feel like they're manipulating gameplay, to be able to wrest storytelling away from someone.
Oh, nice.
There are also like 13 expandable decks, which would make it impossible to
memorize
all the words.
Yeah. Cool.
So Fairy Tales by WizKids.
I'm going to double check that.
So I picked up, I gave away over 50 games at Gen Con, and I came back with, well, the way Sydney counted it was 20, but she was counting a bunch of expansions and a couple boxes that I got multiple copies of. And so I think I was closer to about 12 or 13. Photosynthesis. This is a game where it's a 2-to-4-player game. You're growing, I guess you're not really growing trees, but trees are growing. So you're like a forest, I guess, and you have, everyone has like different colored trees, and they're cardboard trees, so it's like very three-dimensional. And what happens is the sun rotates around the forest, and you want your tree to be in a position where it can absorb a lot of the sun, because you get sun points, and you can spend the sun points to grow your trees or to have a seed fall off a tree so it can grow more trees. So you have like these shadows. So if I have a big tree in front of Josh's small tree, Josh's small tree isn't going to get any sun points.
Damn it.
But if I have a big tree behind Josh's small tree, we will both get sun points because your small tree doesn't shade me. And mostly it's just a point game. You're trying to get your trees grow to full growed. get your trees to full size, and then you can remove them from the board, and you get a point token. And whoever has the most points at the end of the game wins. But it's a very, very simple game to learn, but there's a lot of strategy. And because, like, well, do I try to position my trees to block you, or am I trying to go for maximum points, or, you know, should I grow another seed right now, or do I just want to make my tree bigger?
Sounds like a game I'd like.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. So that's Photosynthesis. I also, Sydney picked up a game called Dragoon, which she's seen. This one's been around for a little while. It was a Kickstarter. They're going to be shipping the actual game relatively soon. But she picked up the kind of Dragoon Gold Edition of it. It's, the art on this is really, really unique. It's I don't even know how to describe it. Like, when you see it, you're like, oh, yeah, that's unique. You either love it or you're like, that's a little weird. I am growing to like it. But this gold edition actually has gold-plated pieces. So all the pieces in this version are metal. And there's gold, silver, black, and maybe bronze, I believe. And they're all, like, coated. So zinc or bronze or whatever. One, the gold one is gold-plated. It's actual gold.
What?
So, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's what it says on the box.
Wow.
Yeah. Very super limited quantity.
Sure.
So we decided to pick it up. It's a fun little game. So essentially what you do in Dragoon is your dragons are moving around the board and you're trying to take over cities or villages, and you're collecting gold, and you're trying to be the first dragon that gets a hoard of, you know, 50 gold. There's also possible thieves. There's a lot of randomness involved. There's some card play so you can interact with the board and mess other people up and things like that. Our impression is it is fun, but very random. I would recommend it. I don't know that the gold version is worth $90. It's real gold. You probably don't need that version. You can probably just get the normal version and still like it just as much. Kitty has information now.
I was completely wrong on both accounts.
Awesome.
It is called Once Upon a Time, and it is from Atlas Games.
All right. Once Upon a Time from Atlas Games.
But I did get all the, you know, description right, I swear. That's the part I remember.
Yes. Well, WizKids has so many small stuff that we've been picking up.
I know. I think it was crossed with Fantasy Realms, which we'll get to in a bit.
Yes, we will get to that multiple times, actually.
Yeah.
Let's see. The next one, I played the L5R Living Card Game. I actually picked up two copies of this one. We played through the first two or three turns of a game. This one's deep. If you like Legend of the Five Rings, like that world, I think this is a very good reboot of that system.
Okay, sorry. So it's Lord of the Rings when you say
No. Oh. Legend of the Five Rings.
Oh, so wait.
Lord of the Rings only is really a legend about one ring, and a whole bunch of other game rings that nobody pays attention to.
So this is just some completely different story.
20-something other rings.
Yeah, there's a lot. This is more feudal Japan.
Okay.
So Legend of the Five Rings is... It's been around for almost 20 years, the lore. So if you want to get into it, this is a pretty decent game to get into. It will introduce you to the lore. And because it's a living card game, Fantasy Flight will have this going for a good... Well, I guess Lord of the Rings living card game is going on 10 years. So this could be around for a while. It's heavy. It's deck building. It's dueling. There's a lot there. But if those are the kind of games you like, then...
Not sure about that one for me.
Yeah, this is the one. It is probably even too heavy for me.
Wow.
I'll pick up the first few expansions just to kind of play through it. I need to play a few more games to really kind of get into it. I don't like deck building single cards as much anymore. I like the Star Wars deck building game because you just pick 10 packs of cards and that forms your deck. I don't have to pick 60 different cards. In this case, I think it's 34. I think it's 30 cards you're picking from this, but and there's two different decks you're building at the same time.
It still feels like a lot of the gameplay is actually not spent playing, it's spent deck building.
Right. And a lot of people like that. Like that's what Magic is most of the time. Is, like deck building. So if you like deck building, this is a good one. If you like, you know, Legends of the Five Rings, it's worthy of the title that so far from what I've seen. Let's see. We picked up another game called The End is Nigh. This is a little quick. It's not really social deduction. There is a possible hidden traitor, but it's more mechanical deduction. You're doing things. You're trying to decide who gets to go in the safe area versus who gets kicked out because there's fanatics who are trying to get into the base. And if they do, they blow up the base and then the traitors win. If they don't, then the group wins as a whole. So it's kind of a co-op with a possible hidden traitor. Plays really, really fast. You have traits and you're kind of looking at different traits for different people. And if those people, you know, they're a fanatic. I believe that's the term they're using. But if they are, it's like that person, we need to get rid of that person, get them out. There's a lot of interaction between the different characters and stuff. Again, really small game, really easy, fun to learn, fun to play. That is The End is Nigh.
Sounds like you liked it.
I did. I liked it quite a bit. There's also a zombie theme of it. So it has like a, I think it's sort of like the asteroids hitting the planet or something like that theme originally, but it's like modern day themed. Ooh. But they have a zombie pack where you can replace everything with zombies are trying to get in and are you infected or not?
Nice.
So, because you got to have zombies everything.
Of course.
Yeah. The last one I want to talk about is Fantasy Realms, but we're going to talk about that in a little bit. And I'm going to mention just a handful of other games I picked up that we will talk about on future shows. This is foreshadowing. Anachrony, which is a time travel worker placement resource management type game. I picked up all of the restoration games, so Downforce, Indulgence, and Stop Thief. I picked up Expanse, the board game, because everyone's like, you got to watch the TV show Expanse. And I'm like, it's so good. I'm like, all right, well, I'll pick up the board game and see if that's good. Masters of Orion Conquest, which is the second Masters of Orion themed game. Dragonfire from Catalyst, which is a retheme of Shadowrun Crossfire. Haven't played it yet. Looking forward to it. So far, it's getting pretty good reviews. And then the last one, best name ever, Professor Evil and the Citadel of Time. So I will give you guys all an update when we've played more of those.
Nice.
All right, Josh.
Sure. Well, let's go to some feedback about past episodes. And if you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. So we have the Christopher Dong is our first and only feedback.
But we're probably not going to read the email because...
Sure.
We had a little off-air discussion about this particular email. Christopher sent us a very well-thought-out email.
Yes.
Talking about how different people approach whether or not you can judge a game on your first try or not. And the only reason we don't read it is because it's almost like reading a flowchart or code. And we think that it might put some of you to sleep. But what we do want to do is talk about this subject again, because I think it brought up a lot of really interesting ideas. The question that he was responding to was, is it fair to judge a game on your first playthrough? And when might you do that? And when, you know, might you not?
Right. Because we talked about this in a previous episode, right?
Right.
Where we were all giving our ideas about, oh, you know, how many times do I take to judge a game? How many playthroughs do I take? And we all had different opinions on that.
Right. So Kitty had, I will paraphrase some of what Christopher's saying here. Essentially what he's saying is people who are newer to the game.
So he calls them beginning learners and experienced learners. So he says that a beginning learner kind of goes through a checklist. They need to go through and see every element of the game and check those boxes. Whereas an experienced learner can check maybe the first box, then like a later box, and know that it's going to fill in all those ones in between. And you don't have to necessarily play through as many times to see where the game is going and how it's designed.
Right. Which I think that the idea is right, but yeah. I don't know that it's beginning and experienced. I think it's just the way that some people look at games.
Yes.
Well, here's the thing, because I think it's right in the broad strokes terms. You know, we said ourselves that, you know, me and Kitty will probably take a few more plays, and you will often know very quickly based on the fact that you have a ton of experience both designing games and playing games. And that's understandable. But I think even though Christopher's point is true in broad strokes, I think there are still detailed points in different games where it doesn't hold true, because there's a lot of emotional attachment and an emotional kind of things that come into play when deciding whether you like a game or not. And even someone like yourself, you know, which we talked about, I think, you know, some games, Kitty was saying, like the artwork puts Chris off, right?
Yeah. Chris is definitely one who will not play a game if he doesn't necessarily like the theme or the look of the game.
I might play it, but I'm certainly not drawn to it.
Yeah. It won't be the one you pick off the shelf.
Right.
Like we were talking about Inish.
Yeah.
And Chris likes that game. He likes to play it. If I came down and said, let's play it, he'd say, yeah, totally. But if I said, Chris, pick a game to play, it's not going to be the one he picks out.
Right.
My take on this was, so I think I just fall into the experienced learner category, but Christopher was putting me in the beginner category, so made me a little mad, but I'm over it. So I can judge a game based on its mechanics the first playthrough, probably. I can look and see, this game makes sense. I know how to play through it. But do I want to keep playing it? Sometimes I do need to give it a second, third playthrough, because the feel of the game takes sometimes more than one playthrough to really get going and into it. Sometimes even if I can see the mechanics are there to build a good engine, if I didn't get mine going, I don't necessarily feel as passionate to play again.
Right.
Unless I was so close, and then I'm like, I want to play immediately again because I know how to do it this time.
Yeah, and I think kind of what that touches upon is the fact that, like, you know, a game can have the elements that maybe Chris or you or me is looking for, but then after playing it a few times, you realize it doesn't actually execute that well on those elements. So, oh, it is a deck builder with these mechanics and these mechanics and these extra bits that I like. However, when I played it for the second, third, fourth time, I realize actually it's clunky and these cards get in the way and this card was too overpowered. And I only realized, though, that the second and third and fourth time of playing. And I think there's so many occasions where that will happen, you know, where there'll just be something in there that you didn't spot the first time that kind of really threw a spanner in the works. And you're like, oh, this is normally the kind of game I like, but I'm not so sure now.
I'll do the opposite as well. So, and there's been a few games where after I'm done playing it, it's like, it's a good game, except I would tweak this rule or that rule. And when I think that, something is wrong. Like, I missed something from the game. You know, I played, well, Dragoon is a good example. It's very random. And one of the reasons I'm like, immediately, I'm like, well, you could do this and this and this to kind of take out some of the randomness. But I'm like, I have to play this game again by the rules because maybe I'm just missing something. Maybe it's not as random as I think. So that's a case where I want to play it a few more times. And if it's short enough, I will. But at a certain point, I'll stop playing it because I think that there's a rule that I have to house rule it to make it a good game, which that maybe that house rule is the only thing that needs, but I'll still go play something else because as written, the game isn't as fun for me as I'd like it to be.
Yeah, makes sense.
So, but it's really, really tricky. I think the answer is sometimes you play a game the first time and you love it. You know, Spencer's, Odin's Raven. That's a hard name to say.
It's really hard to say. I'll admit I practiced it a couple times.
And sometimes you play a game and you're just like, I never want to do that again.
Yeah, but sometimes it's in between. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, my opinion is we're all kind of stupid monkeys who have emotions, and those base emotions are very instinctual. And, you know, I said it in the last episode when we talked about this. If you've had a bad day, if you haven't eaten, if you're grumpy, if you lost really badly, like, it doesn't matter if you're Chris and you know everything about game design, you're still not going to look at that box again and be like, oh, for some reason, I don't want to play that.
Well, it's the reason why art's so important, because it elicits an emotional reaction.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. I also think you have to allow sometimes for number of players you're playing with. Like, some games play better, like Tournament at Camelot. If I had played a three-player game the first time through, I don't know that I would have liked it as much. I think it plays the best at four players. Or if you were trying to squeeze a fifth player in, you know, I really think as much as there are rules for that many people, it's an essentially four-player game. And maybe, you know, those mechanics are there, but not quite as well with more players or less players for certain games.
That's a really good point.
I had another point, but it's gone. Well, the baby's eating my brain. Yeah, what can I say?
Well, we need to put the baby status in there. So how big's the baby now?
It's the size of a sweet potato.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to put that at the top of the show from now on.
I was going to throw it at the end of the credits because we forgot it this time.
Oh, that works.
But now we threw it in here.
All right.
It's in.
Let's go to some quick questions.
All right. So you said that for me, basically. All right. Let's go to a question from Aaron. What is your favorite game to whip out while waiting for others to arrive? Short, simple filler games.
So I'm sure there are dozens and dozens and dozens. And in fact, this is probably an entire episode by itself. But I'm using this question as an excuse to talk about another game that I got at Gen Con that we just played as we were waiting to... Actually, we just wanted to play a game that was short and simple before the podcast.
Yep.
And that is Fantasy Realms. Fantasy Realms, to me, sounds like this big, epic game. It turns out it's a deck of 52 cards, and I guess you could call it Fantasy Rummy would probably be a better way to describe it. It's a hand-building game. You deal out 7 cards to each player. You can draw one from the top of the deck, and then you discard a card. The discard piles basically spread all over the table because you can also take any card from the discard pile. You're trying to build the best hand of 7 cards before there are 10 cards discarded to the table. That's the whole game. We just played it. What did you guys think?
I thought it was really fun, and not just because I won.
But it didn't hurt.
I love Rummy, though. My family, we play Rummy 500 is what we call it. I've heard it called. There's so many variants of Rummy. Yeah, so.
Especially in the Midwest.
Oh, yeah. So I love the Rummy mechanics of, you know, like trying to optimize your hand and really like making the choices and like studying everything on the table. So
is because I played Rummy Cub with the tiles. Is it just the exact same game as Rummy?
Basically, the mechanics of Rummy, when you talk about that, you're usually talking about sets or straights or runs, depending on how you refer to those 1, 2, 3, 4 type of things.
Right.
So that's really what you're doing in a Rummy game is you're trying to collect sets or collect
runs. Yeah. I mean, I really liked it. I thought it was an amazing game. Like, yeah, it's really simple, quick, easy to learn, like you said. And, you know, you had extra modifiers on the cards. So, you know, had all these different suits like beasts and weather and wizards and things. And they could combine to have either positive effects, extra points, or negative effects. And so there was that nice little engine building strategy to go with it. But it was simple enough, even for someone like me who doesn't like too many choices. I was like, oh no, cards with loads of text on them. But actually, it was fine for me.
Yeah, in a nutshell, each card has a certain number of points in the upper left corner. But really, it's the interaction between the cards that give you lots of points. So each card has some kind of text that either gets you better points if that it's in your hand with another card, or make get you worse points if it's in your hand with another card. And it gives you a lot of different things that you're trying to go for and just try to optimize your hand.
My only complaint with it would be that it ends when you have 10 cards in the discard pile. So it feels like you're only ever going to get through half the deck in one play.
Yep.
Which I'm like, I want to see more cards. I want more chances to make my hand the best.
That goes back to my house rule thing, because as soon as we were done playing, I'm like, we could house rule it so everyone got at least 5 turns or something like that. But I'm like, we should play it a few more times as is just to see.
It wouldn't make sense if you did the typical rummy end where it's just like somebody has their hand and goes, rummy, and you know, you're done then.
Because your hand is 7 cards always, and it's those how those 7 cards interact
together. There is no getting rummy equivalent in the game. You can always keep tweaking. So you could just keep playing infinitely if you didn't put a kind of arbitrary cutoff.
And that's sort of why the gameplay is fast. It's maybe 15, 20 minutes tops. Yes. So you can play mini games. Like, that's how you play Rummy in general. You tend to play multiple games. Rummy 500 is you keep playing until someone gets 500 points.
Yep.
You know, so I think that's kind of the intent here, is you keep playing and then each hand carries over. So each game by itself is relatively short.
It's really fun. My only complaint is I want to see more cards.
I know. We will play again after the show. Speaking of which, the show is running long, so let's go on topic.
I told you we would.
I know. You always know.
In this episode, we're talking about gaming trends. Chris and Kitty just got back from Gen Con, and even though Chris gave over 50 games away, he came back with 20 more. What trends do we see in those new games, and what do we think we'll see going forward? Let's find out.
Yeah, so I thought this was an interesting one. Con season, usually Gen Con's kind of the end of the season. Nowadays, there's cons year-round.
Constantly.
But Gen Con's where you see a lot of new stuff. So I threw the question out there to our listeners, and we got a ton of feedback on this one. I had a few in mind, but I'm just like, there's a lot of things here that I didn't even think about. So we're talking about, where is this industry going? Like, what kind of games are we seeing? Now, the big thing that I'm seeing more than, and maybe just because I'm looking for it, and so big that we're going to make next week's topic on this subject alone, so we're not going to cover, you know, talk too much in depth on this, but I'm seeing a ton of games that have solo and co-op modes, even if they're originally meant to be competitive.
Yes.
Huh.
So I love the look that Josh is giving me right now.
I had no idea that this was a trend.
One of the things that I'm seeing, like, especially in Kickstarters, a question is like, is there a solo mode? Is there a co-op mode? And designers will be adding solo and co-op modes during the campaign just so that they can check that box on the back of the box. Put that bullet point on the back of the box. You know, we did an interview with Andrew Parks several months ago regarding his new game. And one of the things that he was adding is a co-op version. It's a competitive game. But it's like, all right, we're going to add a co-op version. We'll add a solo version, you know, because that's what people were asking for. So we're going to cover that one in depth next week. So if you think that that's a trend too, and that's not, you know, we don't talk too much about it, that's why. So what are you guys are seeing in games right now?
Well, Legacy is a huge one, obviously, and has been, I guess, for just a few short years. I think it feels relatively new based on your, you know, explanation to me and our, you know, experience. But I love the format, and I think I think that's why it's a trend, is because it seems to have really exploded in popularity because everyone loves it. Like, I've only actually played Pandemic Legacy. And that's like the kind of biggest smash hit, I feel, in that genre. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like the one that's got the most traction, the most, you know, enthusiastic, crazy support, because it just works so well and people are having so much fun playing it. And people are like dying for season two, which we all are. So
we saw it at Gen Con.
Oh my God.
If you heard that part of the episode.
No, I didn't.
Jen actually played it.
Wow. Oh yeah, no, I got as far as her talking about that, and now that got me super excited again. So it's just that idea of legacy games is that you're kind of opening new content as you play. The game is constantly changing, rules are being rewritten, so you're kind of constantly changing your strategy as the game evolves. You have to evolve how you play.
And I think that ties in with the co-op thing really well, is that the legacy games that people seem to really be enjoying are also co-op games. And the problem with co-op games sometimes is they can feel a little bit like a solo game. One person can kind of take it over. But when you have the legacy element in there, it's changing so fast that you need more than one person looking at the situation to really get everything in your mind, to wrap everyone's minds around the game. You have to have a few people at the table really discussing it.
Yeah. I will say there was some discussion as whether or not there's enough legacy games to make legacy a trend. This was actually Caleb brought this up.
Okay.
Now, I am going to use the term legacy for really... for most campaign games.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because legacy and campaign... the definition of the two are really just the label on the box.
Right.
You know, so Risk Legacy, Pandemic Legacy, Seafall, all, created by the same designer. Those are really the only official legacy games. But Gloomhaven is a legacy game.
Right.
You know, it has the stickers. There's things that are changing. You get different characters that add different ways you can play the game. Different scenarios will have different win conditions. You're not putting stickers in the rule book, but... it's a legacy game because you are playing through and the game is changing as you play.
I throw Near and Far in that category as well. That was a really fun one that I've been trying to remember to bring back to the table because we don't often get games to the table multiple times. We're too busy trying the new thing.
Yep. So in Near and Far, there are no stickers, but it's still changing. You're playing through the same characters. Now, a lot of times we refer to those as campaign games. I'm going to refer to campaign and legacy as essentially the same thing for the purposes of this conversation.
I won't start this again, but I think if it's completely resettable, it's not quite the same.
Sure, sure.
But if you are carrying something over play to play and through the campaign, then it's... basically the same thing.
What do we feel about the unlockable content portion of it being like part of the secret sauce? Like how much of that is part of the popularity of these games?
I think that is an extremely big part of it. Think about video games. You know, a lot of times video games and board games, they are kind of their own realm of thing. But video games, downloadable content, unlockable content, achievements, all of these things are making their way into board games in a big way. Wow. The downloadable content is our expansion. I've seen many board games that have achievements. If you're playing Dungeons and Dragons, you can actually download a sheet of achievements to play through organized play and check off that you've done all these achievements. The unlockable content, Gloomhaven, technically like Near and Far, it's not unlockable, but it's discoverable. As you go through, you're learning more on the story.
It doesn't have the same kind of permanent feel to it. But I think, and it has a few different styles of play that you can use, but there is a campaign mode that feels very much like a legacy style game. Yeah.
Well, First Martians has two different campaigns, one that's resettable and one that isn't. So there's it has the envelopes that you have to unlock as you're playing through. And that draws you to it. It makes you want to play it again. A friend of mine, Sarah, she played through Seafall, the entire campaign, because they wanted to see where the story went. It's not a great game. That's not just me, the reviews. But that unlocking, seeing what happens next, kept them coming back and playing more.
It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah, just that little... it's such an easy mechanic. You know, it almost is gimmicky, and yet it does feel so good when you're doing it. Like, wanting to find out the next bit of the story in Pandemic Legacy was just like, oh, it had me on the edge of my seat. Like, what's going to happen next? This is crazy.
Yep.
I'm not sure if this is throwing into this trend or if it's a new trend, but Stronghold is doing the Fabled Fruit, the Fabled style of game, where it's you start with a deck and it's like, you know, stop, this is the bottom of the deck, and then you turn it over and you've got it the right way and you can just play through. You don't need to read any rules. You don't need to do anything. And each time you play, you don't shuffle the cards. You don't change anything. It is like, it gets more and more complex as you get through this gigantic stack of cards.
So,
and he's got four new ones coming out, I think.
Yeah.
Yep. That he announced at Gen Con.
Yep. So the idea that, you know, you just pick up where you left off, but you're playing another game. So those types of games, I think we're going to see more and more and more of them.
Definitely.
Christy also mentioned crowdfunding. I think that that is a trend that's not going away. We mentioned, you know, we did a Kickstarter episode last year. Some board games is something like 30 or 40% of Kickstarter funds. Like, that's crazy when you consider what Kickstarter was started for.
So wait, you're saying that of anything that's put on Kickstarter, 30 to 40% of it is board games?
That's the number I heard. I don't have sources, so consider this a Wikipedia entry. if you have a correct source, let me know.
I'd be interested as well in the percentage of games in the board game industry that have used Kickstarter. Like, it must be fairly high, right?
It's high. It's definitely not like over 50%.
Right.
But I would say it's probably in the 10 to 20%.
Right, right.
Yeah. It's a big deal. Kickstarter is allowing people to make their indie games and make them come to life. And some of them are really, really good.
Yeah.
Let's see. Steve has been talking, mentioned the gap between Euro games and Ameritrash or Amerithrash, however you want to say it, is closing. It's hard to see a game these days that is like, oh yeah, that's a pure Euro game, which means no randomness, really. Also, they say light on the theme, but it's a very much a, you start out and you just make turns. There's no random elements to it whatsoever, versus the American style game, which is make a choice and then roll the dice and see what happens. The games are starting to get kind of combined.
They're like blending.
Yeah.
We're making purple.
Yeah, we're making purple. Red and blue make purple. Which I think is a great thing too, because I like not a lot of randomness in my games, but just enough randomness to keep it interesting is also good too. I don't like games that can be solved.
Yes.
You know.
That is exactly what I was going to say.
Yep. Which is true. I think that that is absolutely happening. There are some straight up very Euro games still coming out, and there are some games that are very Amerithrashy out there, but it's, the line is getting blurred. It's really hard now to say, nope, there's this and that. What else can you guys think of?
I thought Josh was going to say something, but apparently he was just going to pull a face.
I was.
So I'm going to go with escape room style games.
Yeah.
I have yet to get a group to play an escape room with me, and I have a few of them now, and I just need people. And I'm so excited about it because real escape rooms are so much fun, and I love solving puzzles. And this is totally my thing. And I just need more people.
So we were talking before the show. Kitty and I are going to play through the Harry Potter deck building game because I just got the monster box of monsters. And so we're like, let's just play through all 7 years and do it. So we're going to get probably us. Josh, you're welcome to come over if you want. Sydney hasn't played through it yet either, so she wants to. So we're gonna do that.
Cool.
Part of that, though, the reason I mentioned that is because I also have like four escape room games sitting on my shelf that once I play them, you can't play them again. So then it makes room for new games.
Nice. Yeah.
So we're going to have to do that.
Definitely. We will. We're also going to have you. Somebody here hadn't done an escape room in real life,
had
they? It was you?
Yeah.
Yeah, we need to drag Josh to a real escape room.
Yeah,
for sure. I'm dying to do one of those things. I love like immersive theater and interactive things. This is my jam.
Yep. Michael mentioned with escape rooms, he also mentioned possibly more augmented reality in games. Ooh. So we haven't seen this, and I don't know if you can call it a trend when it hasn't started happening yet, but Apple announced what they call ARKit, which is augmented reality that makes it easy for developers to put augmented reality into mobile applications. Unity, which is a game programming platform
that Pokemon Go is made from.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Most of the games you play on your mobile devices are. Right. They also have the easy ability to do virtual reality stuff. And they're starting to build in some more AR into their things as well. I can imagine a board game where at some point, and we'll add this in there too, apps are a semi-trend that's happening in board games now. But imagine where you put down your bits and pieces and you look through on your phone and everything like starts jumping around and coming to life.
Maybe see hit points on some of your minis and stuff.
Exactly. And it doesn't even have to, it can be a complete augmented thing to the game. Like you could have, it's like, okay, yeah, this, we just have these little tokens there.
Much like Pokemon Go. Exactly. When it starts draining your battery, you turn it off.
Exactly. But yeah, the tokens can represent everything you need. But if you're looking at it through your phone, it gives you another level of stuff. You don't need miniatures in the box anymore because now you just put your phone and now I can see they're standing around and they're animating. And when I put them close to each other, they start fighting each other.
Oh my God, that reminds me
they
of
start
the...
to look dead.
Yeah. Did you ever play that chess on the PC?
Battle chess?
Yeah, where the rook was like a big stone monster would eat people.
Yep.
Oh my God, it was so cool.
Yeah, I love take a pawn and attack the queen. That's awesome. Battle chess. But those are the kind of things that we can start doing with augmented reality.
Yeah.
And that obviously comes to like virtual reality. But once we're in virtual reality, are we playing board games or video games?
Right.
That's a question for another show.
I think so. Well, I think, yeah, it hasn't quite got to that point for us to even experience it, to know it. But it's, I mean, we're at the sort of beginning of it, you'd think. Although, are we? I mean, it's not, it doesn't feel like virtual reality's taken off. So we'll have to see. I think the jury's out as to whether how much it gets in there.
According to R&D at my place of employment, VR is like the next huge thing.
Right.
I'm in the camp with you, though. I don't see it yet.
I'm skeptical.
Yeah. This is the fourth time that VR is potentially taken off. Yeah. It's been around for 20 years.
Yeah, I remember the 80s, Lawnmower Man, the movie, had like virtual reality stuff going on. You're like, oh, this is going to happen like next year. Yeah. And it was just like, nope.
So
I love Back to the Future's guesses about what was about to take off in the 80s. Hey, I love it.
They got Skype right for 2015.
That's so true.
That's true. But they are virtual reality. Like I say, it's getting a little bit more consumer friendly. It's going to be a while.
Yeah.
So we'll see. VR has a possible interaction. AR, though, I think is a much more. VR being virtual reality, what you see is just all video generated. AR being augmented reality, meaning you see the real world, but we're just superimposing something on top of it.
Right.
I think AR is a little bit more promising because our devices in our pocket can do that for us right now.
Right.
So as we know with Pokemon Go.
Woo.
Aaron thinks that the quality of games is improving. There's definitely a trend in that.
I agree with that. Yeah. Components.
Is it quality or is it quantity? Like if you throw out enough games, some of them are going to be really high quality, but are all games becoming higher quality?
That is a good question.
Thank you. I try.
Can we think of lots of games that aren't good quality these days? I mean, the problem is you always buy, you know, the good stuff to buy. So
I think the one that's easiest to pick on is Terraforming Mars.
Yeah.
The rule system, the game itself, everybody loves. The quality of the components, everyone's like, yeah, I'm going to go out and buy this third party add-on.
Oh, man. I remember when we interviewed Steve Bonnicol, I almost didn't ask him that question. And I was like, but everyone wants to know about the component quality and what he thinks. And like, he took it a little bit badly, but he was very gracious. But you could hear in his voice that it was kind of like, oh, I've been asked this question a number of times now. The components are fine, but not the wider audience didn't think so.
Yeah. I would say, I think with quality, it is a trend that a lot of games are relying on the quality of the components more so than the quality of the game.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see a lot of awesome miniature, again, Kickstarter, but you see a game, awesome miniature game, you know, 500 miniatures in the box and all of these things. And then when you look at the rules, you're like, yeah, but the game isn't actually there.
Right.
So I think that there's... Kitty's right in that there's a lot of games.
It's a shotgun scatter. There's some that have really high quality rule sets and also really high quality components. There's some that are really good games that their components are, you know, very basic. Like you still see so many games that are using, you know, like cubes and meeples and the little road column.
Basically things. Generic ponds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's most of the time there's, I don't feel like the quality of the components takes away from gameplay for me, unless it is something flimsy. Like we were talking about Fantasy Realms today. Right now it's great, but if you are playing it, think of a deck of cards that's been sitting at your grandparents' lake house for 5 years. You know, those cards start to get worn out. If it's a really fun game, you want it to be made of really quality material.
And the Fantasy Realm cards are made of cardstock. They're not made of the linen card material that you would see at the with the deck of cards at your grandma's lake house. So these cards, you know, after a few dozen games, are going to show their wear. So that's something you kind of have to sleeve, and if you want to keep playing it. I will say, though, the quality of games today are way better than the quality of games, on average, of 10 years ago. Fantasy Flight just announced Twilight Imperium 4 at Gen Con. It's a very, very much the same game as Twilight Imperium 3. They streamlined the rules a little bit, which is another thing that Aaron is seeing. Like, rules are getting more and more streamlined. And they upgraded the quality of the components in the box. So TI3, a great game, and nobody was really complaining about the quality of that game. But now it even has better components, nicer molds, smoother ships. Doesn't have all the like flash on it and things like that.
So you're saying they've actually brought out a new version that is almost based solely around just upgrading components and slightly improving the rules.
That's basically it. Yeah.
Wow.
And it sold out immediately. They didn't have a ton of them at Gen Con, but it's on pre-order. It's like, it's really hard to get your hands on right now. And it's in a smaller box. It'll actually fit on shelves. So there's that.
Right.
So I think quality, there is something to it. I do think that the quality of a lot of games is getting better, but it's not every game.
I think it is in general trending upwards.
Yeah. Yep, for sure. Let's see what else. Escape rooms, reimplementations of games as card or dice games. This has been going on for a while.
Have we got some good examples of that?
Catan, the card game.
Oh.
Yes.
Bang, the dice game.
Nice.
Race for the Galaxy, the dice game. Actually, a lot of times when the dice games come out, I like them better than the base games.
I was going to say, that was going to be my question. Do they actually work? Do you then enjoy the experience of these ported versions?
What's the Monopoly one? Everyone really likes
Monopoly Deal.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I have heard pretty good things about most of these games. I will say, though, that I've never heard somebody say it replaces the game that it's, like, theming.
Roll for the Galaxy, for me, replaces Race for the Galaxy. And I've heard other people say that as well.
Fair enough. But, you know, Catan, the dice game, is not replacing Settlers of Catan.
Yeah, right.
Most of them, it's a fun, quick game. So we were talking about, you know, filler games. A lot of these are great for that, you know, just like pull it out, easy to learn, quick to play, but it's not going to be your new, like, oh, this is my favorite new game to play.
Yep. A lot of times these games are very different games. Yes. So like Bang the Dice game is another game that's replaced the original for me. Bang and Roll for the Galaxy are those two games, the dice versions are very, very similar to the original versions. In that case, it can replace the original versions because I don't need to get that same feeling. I don't need to play the original. Where with Catan, the dice game is a very different game.
Right.
It's very loosely themed on Catan.
Yeah.
Where you're using the same resources and kinds of things, but it's not the same mechanics at all. The goals aren't really...
The actual fundamental mechanics of the game are very different. So as you play, it feels very different.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's because Catan is like such a, I don't know if it's really deep strategy. I don't know. But there's a lot going on. There's a lot to see on the board. There's usually lots of decisions and trading and all that going on.
That 2D construction is sorely missed with the dice version.
Yeah.
And that's part of the fun of Catan is building things and... that kind of thing. Although I will say that the Catan two-player game, which I believe is Rivals of Catan, Sydney and I are really, really enjoying that one. It still has the two basic dice, but it has square cards that build your personal area. So you're not cutting each other off. There's no hex grid or anything like that. And it's just a two-player game, and there's a lot of strategy and depth there. Again, just built in the same world, but it's now Catan the card game, Rivals of Catan, And that one I would rather play than Catan because I can play it two players and still have a lot of depth in that.
Seven Wonders Duel.
Seven Wonders Duel.
That's another one. This is actually another trend that I was going to bring up that I forgot but has been reminded of is two-player games that are not deck dueling games.
Yeah.
I've seen so many more two-player games where there's a different mechanic, there's something more going on. Patchwork, Odin's Ravens, Scheherazade.
Star Wars Rebellion.
Co-op. Yeah. Yep. There's a lot, I think people are really trying to fill that niche of like gaming couples who don't have somebody over all the time to play a three-player, four-player game, but still want to have something to play. They're really developing a lot more.
Yeah. I would say because most of our two-player games up until a couple of years ago were abstract games, chess, checkers. I use those as an example because they're easy, but even the two-player games that existed that weren't those, they were still fairly abstract, very tactical, you know, all the information's on the board, you're just playing against each other, or something like Magic, where you're dueling against someone else. It's a deck dueling game. I agree that the idea of a two-player board game is phenomenal. Star Wars Rebellion is a two-player, six-hour-long board game.
Wow.
And I love it.
Yeah.
Like, it's great. So those types of things, like you can really get away with having a two-player game and just be a two-player game.
Yeah, sweet.
Yep. What's hard is three-player games. People hate three-player games.
Huh? I didn't know that.
Yep. Three.
Is it just the mechanics are really hard to get right for three?
No, you can actually. Oftentimes, three is fine and it plays great, but that three mark. It eliminates the solo player. It eliminates the two-player. So you have to have at least three players. And a lot of gaming groups just don't have a consistent three-player
group. You're saying
group.
It's very difficult to have an only three-player game.
Only three-player or, yeah, not less than three players. Mm.
Okay. I hear your game that you are designing is going to have a three-player mode, although you can play it two-player.
It'll be up to six.
Oh. Yeah. I'm looking forward to playing the multiplayers of your game.
Yeah, we need to actually pull that out and try that.
I think so.
We've only ever dueled it, but I think it plays up to six pretty well.
Nice.
So we'll try. One other thing I want to end with, but I just want to make sure. Let's see. Christy mentions Legacy, Roll and Write, larger companies buying smaller companies. XXX, the dice game, that's true, crowdfunding. We mentioned Steve's Gap Between Euro and America Games closing. More streamlined quality, cinematic and experience. We're seeing a lot of those where you have something like Blood Rage instead of Risk. You know, it's more themed. So you're not really just abstract, you know, this.
Because Risk feels generic is what you're saying. And Blood Rage has a really strong theme
to it.
And a world and a universe built around it.
Yep.
And I think cinematic, though. Is that just part of the theme? I mean, what does that mean,
cinematic? I think that cinematic, in my mind, is something that's just a little bit more, like, you can kind of get into the theme more. It's not a pasted-on theme. It's like the theme is what drives you to want to play it.
More of like the, like, kind of an epic game feel.
Right.
And it doesn't need to be long.
Right.
It's just this, like, you can imagine how this would have played out. Like, you can see the story in your head.
Yeah, often I feel Cool Mini and Not often do that really well with all their awesome minis.
Well, it helps to have all the 3D miniatures.
Yeah.
For sure. Let's see. Apps, we talked about that. The last one. Do you guys have any others before I bring this one up? So the last one is big companies buying up smaller companies.
Oh, Asmodee.
Asmodee.
Is going to lead to the gaming world.
I think this is actually not a bad thing. And the reason I say that is because if you have a company that says, you know, all these little boutique companies are coming out and making games and I want to own those, I want to buy those, what that shows in the industry is there is money and a desire to have control of all of that money. Now, there's always going to be boutique games out there. Kickstarter makes sure that people like Asmodee don't control the gaming industry. It's not going to be like, oh, well, the only games we can ever play are from Asmodee. That's never going to happen because making a board game is actually not that difficult to do. It's hard work. It's a lot of things, and making a good one is hard. But most people who put the time into it can actually do that. You put it on a crowdfunding platform, and you can get your game out there with a little bit of work. it doesn't matter that Asmodee's out there. It's actually a good thing that they're out there because that keeps the hobby moving. It keeps new stuff coming out.
Slight skeptic comment. I mean, I agree with you, but then my counter is it not worrying that there's not like another Asmodee? Like that's as big as them and an equal rival. They're kind of pulling away, aren't they? I mean, that's the idea I get. Maybe I'm wrong. So
what I see right now is Asmodee is kind of a holding company because they own a lot of game companies, like game publishers that, you know, Plaid Hat, Z-Man Games, Fantasy Flight, all of these are like owned by Asmodee.
Right.
But they're not branded that. Fantasy Flight is still kind of an independent publisher.
I was going to say it kind of depends on what the larger company does. If it comes in and it buys these smaller boutique companies and says, we like what you're doing, take more resources to do it well.
Right.
You know, that helps the industry. If they're buying up these boutique companies, though, and saying, we want you to make games our way now, that's not helping.
Right.
But from what I've seen, fingers crossed, it's adding more resources to companies that are doing things well. It's giving them the ability to do more of what they are doing right.
I guess it spreads the risk as well. I mean, if you know one game company has a bad year, then they can kind of offset the other companies that had good years and still keep everyone afloat.
Exactly.
Maybe that's how it's working.
Yeah, when Hasbro, I mean, if you think about Hasbro, you know, Fisher-Price, Parker Brothers, those are big game companies too. When Hasbro bought Wizards of the Coast back in the late 90s, that was a big concern. It's like Hasbro's going to take over Magic. They're going to ruin everything. Basically, what Hasbro said is, no, Wizards of the Coast, we've been doing this a long time. Here's how you need to run a successful business. Do the creative stuff. Make the games. But this is the business plan. This is the model that if you follow this, we'll actually be able to sustain. And they got on track. And now Wizards of the Coast with Magic and Dungeons & Dragons, huge.
Right.
Their parent company is Hasbro. You know, and Hasbro does have veto power on some of these things, but they tend not to use it as far as we can see as the consumer. Right. What we see is the product is getting better. The quality is getting better. The games are getting more consistent. So I mean, everyone wants to hate the big giants and, oh no, be afraid of mega corporations.
Yeah.
And to some extent, yes, when it causes problems where everyone's just doing the same thing, it's a problem. But as long as these mega corporations keep allowing the, you know, subsidiary companies to be their own entities, I think it's a good thing. It keeps those companies around. It allows them to have a bad year and bounce back as opposed to have a bad year and
under and they're done.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, you've won me over.
All right. For now. I'm not saying it's always like, yay, the best things, but
Yeah.
There's upsides and downsides to everything.
Sure.
Every trend.
And on that, we just want to finally thank everybody for listening. We had a blast at Gen Con. Even Josh, who's been listening to it, I did get my rage texts, so that's
As long as you guys keep talking about me, I don't care if it's good or bad. It's like PR. As long as someone's mentioning me, I'm fine.
No such thing as bad press.
Yes.
And if you're interested in supporting us, you can visit us at tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. You could also leave us a review at iTunes or pretty much anywhere else.
Wherever you find your podcasts.
Yeah. Spread the word. Talk about us on BoardGameGeek, on Reddit, on Instagram, Tumblr, all those things that I don't pay a whole lot of attention to.
Our Instagram is actually active now, so you should go check it out.
Yeah. what is our Instagram? Is it just Tabletop Game
Talk? Tabletop Game Talk.
All right. I probably should know that. And on that note, Josh, why don't you take us out?
Sure. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So consider leaving us an iTunes review or email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thank you to all of our patrons, Emil Jiljam, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Tom Bly, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Alex Brown, Michael Ohl, Josh Arntz, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, Joseph Lee, John Merkel, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Rudy Lou, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Hang, Mike Smith, Stefan Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, John Lewis, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, and Joseph Lee. Until next week, when we talk about solo and co-op games, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night.
good job not calling yourself Kitty at the beginning where Chris forgot to change the notes.
And I didn't say Jim Jam.
You did not say Jim Jam.